Blog Talk Radio.
Tell a friend, Real Radio, SP the Ghost, LOXD Block, yeah.
Hey, yo, it's Tyler Kwali. I'm in the house, I'm in Baltimore. We rocking with Real Radio, because the only radio that I would ever rock would be Real Radio. Let's go.
Yo, I just felt like doing that today, and I tell you why. You know, I'm sitting back, and I'm realizing that this year is our 10th anniversary. Like, that is nothing to sneeze at. That's nothing to play with. You talk about consistency, you're talking about giving it your all week in, week out. You're talking about dedication, and that's what you come up with. And I'd be remiss to not thank those who have contributed over the years, and, you know, we'll do something much bigger later on in the year. But I'm pumped about that. That's a milestone. You have television shows that don't last that long, and here we are, still waking up on a Saturday to inform, entertain, and get some shit off our chest. So, good morning, family. What's going on? Look, interesting week this week. Lot of stuff going on, specifically in sports. So, Brother Barry's going to join us a little later on to talk about that. And Sister Rashi wanted to talk about folks in power, which actually bleeds into a number of the things that's going on in the sports world this week. North Carolina, the Supreme Court in North Carolina just struck down the Republicans' gerrymandering map to cheat folks out of their right to, not their right, but because they're still going to have the right to vote, but giving folks less of a avenue to express their opinions about who should represent them. So that's what's up. The killer in the Ahmaud Arbery case, his lawyers petitioned for a plea. The judge denied that. It's a crazy week. It's a wild week.
Jam-packed news, including the other two cops.
with Derek Chauvin. They got their moment of reckoning. The three cops, the other three cops
you talked about the threats against HBCUs that have been going on for a week's time now.
The FBI
put those folks in custody. Allegedly, it was five or six minors. So again, it's a lot to cover in the time that we have. But you know, we'll do our best to stay on course and stay on task to discuss all those points before we get on out of here. But dig it, I had an interview yesterday, and it was a two parter. I've never had such a thing happen to me before in life, sis. So I went to the interview, walk in, spoke directly to the receptionist, told that person whom I was there to see. She, in turn, made a phone call. I had a person come up. They grabbed me. We sat down. We had a discussion, a pretty good discussion. I walked away. I'm thinking that, okay, it is what it is. We'll see what happens. Get a phone call about 20 minutes later saying, you're not going to believe this. And I'm like, okay, what's going on? It's like, I'm thinking offer came like that. You know what I'm saying? All right, that's crazy. No, that wasn't the case. The case was the dude interviewed me for the wrong damn job. So they asked if I could turn around and come back. Now, the good thing was I decided to take lunch with a friend, so I'm sitting there having lunch, shopping and chewing. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't that far away. The bad thing was I never experienced anything like that. I was not prepared to go back at all. It did cut into my sleepy time and other things, but it's okay. I went back. I had another good feel and vibe when I walked out the second time, and, you know, we'll see what we do. But I professed some months ago how well and good life was, and I said that, you know, I'm riding this high now because I know a low is going to come. I'm not at a low. I'm not there. But I'm curious to see what else is out there. You know, I've been with the same company now for a good clip, and it's like, do I want to continue to ride this wave, or do I want to see what's out there and potentially get on another wave and see where that takes me? And that's where I'm at right now. So, you know, out here pounding the pavement, which is not even pounding the pavement anymore. You know, job hunting has gone so digital that, hell, three quarters of the interview process is handled online. And you sitting in front of somebody at that point is just butter, to be honest with you. So and everybody's hiring right now. I mean, everybody's hiring right now. Rodney actually talked to me about some potential out in Vegas. And, you know, I've made no attempts to hide the fact that I do want to go that way eventually, be in Arizona, be in Nevada. You all know I love California, and being close enough to where I could spit and, you know, actually hit Cali would be primo for me, you know. We'll see what happens, and I'll keep you all abreast of that situation, because this has definitely been an interesting time all the way around. But, yeah, man. Have you ever had
a... I mean, they should be ready. I mean, when everybody else is quitting, it should be an easy peasy to get a job. Because half the rest of the nation was like, you know what? I'm feeling like early retirement.
But it's not. And I think a lot of it is so difficult because it has really fallen to analytics versus the human gut. Again, you know, getting in front of somebody now is major. Because, you know, their tests they want you to take online, there's all kinds of stuff they want you to go through online before you even get to the HR department. And then once you get there, then it's usually another phone interview. Usually there's a phone interview. From the phone interview, then you get passed to the hiring manager. You sit with the hiring – well, depending on what level you're coming in at, right? So for me, it's you sit with the hiring manager. If they like you, he or she, doesn't matter. If they like you, then you go and sit with a director or a VP or somebody like that. And then if that person blesses you, then you get the gig. So it's crazy.
I think I'm strong on my boss. I told her, look, there's a new job. I don't know if you know that, but there's a new job, and I'm the girl for you. You will be able to tell me what to do. I will shut up and sit down 5 minutes before you even have to say it. Please come on. And she said, go down there. She said, hold on, let me look. And she said, she literally, while we were talking on the phone, clicked something. And she said, okay, now go down there and tell them that you've been hired and tell them you need the hiring package. I was like, okay. I was ready to fight back and it's to do the song and dance. Because I know the song and dance. I did it for almost since I had graduated in 2014. I was unable to get properly employed until then in 2020.
Mm.
It was like 2019 when I finally got a piece of job that led me to another bigger piece of a job. It still ain't the actual job. I don't envy anybody who decided they want to work right now without education. That minion work, that's all that's left. If you can read and stuff, they done consolidated 10 of them counting reading jobs down to 6 jobs. But it's a million stocking jobs waiting on you. You know, if you wanted to do sacking and stocking, if you wanted to do truck driving, if you wanted to take care of white elderly booties, those jobs are waiting on you.
Elderly booties?
Hey, that's what CNAs and them do. They'll tell you they're in there passing medication and all that. But the real work of the elderly is cleaning them after they have, decided that they don't do that themselves anymore.
Mm.
The real work is not feeding them, because you can get them cooked or go order some Uber in. The real work is when you have to clean, like, the places that where the machines interface with the human. You know what I'm talking about? You got to clean, like, the stomas and the bandage gauze. You got to unwrap, and then you got to clean that, the pissy mattresses. That's real work. And they waiting. America is getting extremely old every day. At least, 100,000 more Americans are transitioning over to needing hospice and needing, elder care. And these particular old folks was the ones who was getting hired in the Georgia Pine back in the day, so they are not cognitively able to even be grateful.
Why would that affect them?
Because if you grow old with a drug-addled brain, it doesn't let you grow old like if you didn't do nothing to it.
Gotcha.
A compromised brain ages a certain way. And they was not thinking about it in 1960 and 70 or even 80 when Coke hit real hard. Nobody was thinking, do you know in 30 years I'm not even going to be able to mumble my name? They weren't thinking about that.
I tell you what I've seen from drug use. Like, it ages the hell out of the body. It ages the hell out of the body. Bones, just ages the hell out of the body. I have an aunt. She just celebrated her birthday yesterday. She's a drinker. Not a big liquor drinker. She's a huge beer drinker. Like, she, it hurts my heart to hear her refer to beer as my beer. Yeah, I need to get my beer. Your beer. You know what kind of psychosis it takes for you to refer to something that's killing you as yours? You put it in such high esteem that you are claiming it as yours. Yeah, that's just not good. So I asked her, I was like, yo, how you doing? She said, I'm good. I said, you still on the sauce or you off the sauce? She's like, well, I'm still drinking my beer. Okay.
What kind of boozy are you still on the sauce? Man, what kind of?
Oh, yeah.
You,
absolutely.
Man, now absolutely. This is how you ask an elder if they still on that bullshit. Hey, you still in these streets, auntie? That's how you feel, in these streets.
Nah, you don't ask them,
hey, is you still a false head? No, you say,
hey, look,
hey,
I go right for the judgment.
You say,
I'll be bullshitting.
Auntie, you still out here kicking it? She know what you're talking about, kicking it.
No, nope, nope. I'm too old.
He said, auntie, is you still
here's my issue. Here's my issue. My issue is on both sides, I am the first. So I'm the first grandchild. Both of my parents were the oldest. So I grew up with my uncles and my aunts more like their little brother. So when we talk, it's more like a brother-sister conversation than an aunt-uncle conversation. And it always has been that way. Because, again, you know, they were kids when I was a kid. So literally, we grew up together. You know what I'm saying? Like, they went outside and played. I was outside playing with them. You know what I mean? Now, they may have been preteens or teens, but still, by the time I was able to get out running and all that jazz, I was running right along with them. You know what I'm saying? They, I have two of my uncles that, no, that's not true, three. Three of my uncles that there's a really large gap between us. I mean, they were really teenagers when I was born. So by the time I got to really running, they were damn near adults. But everybody else, they were preteens when I was born. And hell, two of them weren't even a preteen when I was born. So we literally grew up together. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, nah, it's just a different family dynamic. You know, and it's cool. It's cool for me because I've always lived it, you know. And I was telling someone the other day about when I left my mother's home. You know, I left my mother's home when I was 13. I left in 88. So I was actually 13 when I left. I hadn't turned 14 yet. Yeah, I was 13 when I left. And I called my aunt, the same one I was talking about that just had the birthday, that's still on the sauce. I called her, and I said, yo, just like that, yo, you know anybody with a truck? And she was like, yeah. I said, all right, look, I need it at the house next week because I'm moving. And she was like, all right. And that was it. That was the whole conversation. She didn't say, can I talk to your mother? She didn't say, you all right? Nothing. All she said was, okay, and hung up the phone. And then I called my grandmother because, again, you know, I was raised by my grandparents. So I called my grandmother. I said, Ma. She said, what, baby? I said, I'm coming to live with you. She said, okay, and hung up the phone. Again. Now, this is her daughter that I'm living with. She didn't say, let me talk to your mother. Is everything okay? What's going on? Nothing. All she said was, okay, and hung up the phone. That is my issue. What kid can do that? Could your son do that? Could your son pick up the phone right now and call one of his aunts?
Not his aunts. He don't deal with none of the crazy people.
Oh,
but I have an open standing arrangement that if I am unable to do what my son needs, off to Africa he goes. You know, I don't have.
I'm just saying,
I don't have,
as a generic. Mm-hmm. As a generic. You know, would your
yes,
son be able to pick up the phone?
If something's going, yes, he can, because I explained to him that this whole family got his agenda, so he's not about to go anywhere where they don't call me or talk. You understand? Nobody in my family is ready to ostracize me in an effort to raise my son. Wherever he is, if mm-hmm. I'm not really close by, it'll be a constant communication between me and that person. And that's even going to happen if he has to go to Africa. It'll be enough conversation and communication going down between me and whoever he thought was caring for him. That he ain't, mm-hmm. if the problem was he didn't want to achieve at school, then they're going to have that same issue, and we're going to address it the same way wherever he hook up at, you know?
I got you.
So
I got
unless
you.
He hit the streets and puts himself outside of my sphere of influence. No, he's being raised by me still anyway.
But, you know, again, my mother wasn't incapable of raising me. We just came to a crossroads where we couldn't live together. We just couldn't coexist in the same house, you know. And a lot of that was her doing. You know, she instilled a lot of independence and headstrongness in me because she was told, she was in a very bad accident not too long after I was born, and she was told that she wouldn't be able to walk by the time I turned 5. So she didn't want to have her children fully dependent on anybody else. So me being her oldest, she put a lot on my plate. Well, for whatever reason, she decided, as I became a teenager, that she wanted to take some of that off my plate. And I'm like, yo, it don't work that way. Like, yo, the game is, we at the end of the game. Like, how you going to change the rules at the end of the game? Like, is you white? Like, how you going to change the rules of a brother at the end of the game? Like, it don't work that way. So we started having a lot of clashes. And it wasn't anything crazy. No physical stuff, no, nothing like that, no. But, you know, she started asking me questions that I just wasn't used to, like, you know, where you going, and when you coming back, and let me see your report card. And I'm like, yo,
you know, you know this making you, I mean, I just want you to understand, when you telling people, yeah, we couldn't get along, she kept asking me where I was going and what's up with my schoolwork. That's what she's supposed to be asking you, my guy.
But she didn't do it before, though, Rashi. But she did. That's the issue. She didn't do it before. She didn't do it before. She didn't. If I left the house, there was nothing. Nothing said. Whenever I came back, there was nothing said. Now, all of a sudden, I'm telling you, I think, and she and I had this discussion about a month or so ago. I think she got shook when it was time for me to go to high school. I really think she got shook because then she looked at life as a whole and said, oh, my God, I really haven't spent any time with my baby. And then she looked at me and was like, my baby ain't a baby no more. You know what I'm saying? And she got shook. She didn't know what to do. So her reaction was
her power. She had already transferred the power.
Exactly.
Pretty much what we were doing stuff today. You're saying you think she was trying to pull back on your already pre-existing power that she had gave you when she stopped being kind of like parent, right? Just in your
right.
So, but what? What you couldn't see as a woman trying to fix something that she had perceived herself as breaking. And so you like, it ain't broke. This is good. And she's like, no. All the other children of your age have an adult that they have to reckon with in some way or fashion. But since you have none, you making adult-like decisions with your power. Yeah, she gave you power without giving you a chance to understand it. So, yeah, she should have tried to reestablish that.
She should have?
Well, yes, because...
You think she should have?
Because it's like you can't build a... So think about it as being a part of a circus family. If you're a circus family... Other people's family struggle looks crazy because, you know, you should be able to travel and you should eat whatever is in the town y'all at. And y'all together as a circus, so nobody gets stolen or lost. Y'all don't even think about it like that. You're around, right? So, but now when you see another family at the circus, they come to the circus to see you. You get the other side of what a family unit in theory is supposed to look like. When you start measuring what's happening with your family up against theirs, you realize there are some tenets of their family that you want. You want to know that, you know, every night dinner's going to be ready before midnight. Not knowing if you're going to eat between noon and midnight, what time is going to be the food, that's hectic to a child who has ever had it at a certain time. But for you... that it ate between noon and midnight all your life, it don't mean nothing. So, but when you get ready to start your family, you can't do it. You won't necessarily be a circus family. You'll have to join us, the mainstream people, in how we do our families. So now when you tell your child's teacher. Yeah, she was up all night doing acrobatics and eating cereal at 2 o'clock in the morning. The teacher and the rest of the state's going to be like, hey, man, you can't do that if you expect her to do this in here with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what happened. Your mama had raised you contraindicated to what the rest of the world is going to be asking you for. And so
mm-hmm.
when she woke up and said, oh, shit, I'm going to need him to do this because if he does this, he'll be able to do that. But I can't. I need to talk to him to see if I can get him to, you know. She came to you to talk about change, and you were unwilling to change in the nature that she needed. Now, let me tell you what killed me. So you went to go stay with Big Mama, right? Big
yeah.
Mama had her rules. You didn't strike out on Big Mama talking about, no, I'm good.
Hold on.
I had our mama.
Hold on. Slow down. Slow your roll. No, she didn't. My grandmother never asked me. My grandmother never woke me up to school. My grandmother never asked me for a report card. My grandmother never asked me where I was going. Because normally I didn't go anywhere. Normally I didn't go anywhere. Even when I was with my mother, I really didn't go anywhere. If I went somewhere, it was always with my friends. And my friends were older than me. My friend Matthew, one of my best friends, he's damn near 10 years older than me. So, I mean, that's the only place I went. I'm telling you, she recognized that she lost some critical years, and it hit her all at once, and she got nervous. She got nervous, and she felt a certain kind of way, and instead of her talking and dealing with it in a manner which was considerate of both of us, she just clamped down and was like, what, where, how, who. Yes, she's my mom. I get it. But, yo, you can't give anybody that much freedom and then snatch it right back. And then, well, I'm sorry, and then try to snatch it right back overnight.
Right. So
without
I'm so
them
glad
doing
you led into that.
Without them doing anything
so
wrong.
This is what's happening. This is what happened to Whoopi,
what happened
right? This is what happened to
what
Whoopi
happened?
Goldberg. They gave her
mm-hmm.
the power on her show to say what they feel like is important. What the opinion and perspective of a fairly affluent black woman, what their perspective or an intelligent
correct.
Black woman might be. And so
I'm
when
bring
she
Brother
gave,
Barry on for this. Brother
when
Barry,
she
I'm
gave
bring
her opinion, when she gave her
mm-hmm.
fact, when she gave her information, that's when
mm-hmm.
people decided that they had gave her, just like your grandmother, your mother, too much room, too much leniency.
Right.
And so her mm-hmm. punishment is now she got to be in time out. Okay?
Right.
So, now, if you was Whoopi Goldberg, you would just quit The View and go find
yeah,
another show where they understood that you talk a certain way, if that was possible.
I would.
Instead
now, I'm going to tell you why.
That you got, even if you want to talk to power, you got to talk to power a certain way.
I disagree with that. I think the best way to talk to power would be for her to leave. Because her power is strong enough for her to leave and her to do something different. She could do Sirius. She could do, hell, Apple TV. She could do something independent and still say what she wants to say. And
yeah,
if we
don't need that show. Whoopi don't need that show. And I think I think the problem with us is we have given them the power for way too long. That's our collective struggle is to what do we value versus what we don't value. What we call peace compared to what's really just chaos. And we have a hard time collectively discerning the two. I didn't want to rain on the parade last week, but I'm always worried when I see what we call allyship versus noticing the trend. And I will tell y'all, our people struggle because Dr. King them thought that teaming up with the white women in Michigan, Minnesota, and Maryland and all those places during the civil rights struggle was the way to go. and most of the stories about the affairs are with those women. How do you think those stories came out? How do you think those women showed up? See, we don't understand historically the compromises that we make. That's why I brought up Frederick Douglass, and I brought up the black suffrage movement that was overran by the white woman suffrage movement. Because the allyship has always came at a cost of us sacrificing us. And that's the same thing with this power thing. Sister Goldberg was exactly correct with what she was stating. She was not wrong. Yes, Hitler then was talking about race, but no one talks about the gypsies that they wiped out. Those were the melanated people who died more than the Jewish folks.
Yeah, those Romanians.
They were known as gypsies. We use that term a lot. Gypsies was the traveling circus, even here in the United States. That's where those people come from. And so when she talked about it wasn't about race, she was saying more so on the side of Hitler was blaming Jewish people for the banks. He was blaming them for the power and the influence. In the United States, in our country, which is where she's from, white people are white people, right? That's the way she was raised, right? Now, the other side of it, going back to the 1930s, what Whoopi didn't know was even in this country, Jewish folk, Irish folk, Polish folk weren't considered to be white until the late 1930s. They had to get buy-in, and it took the GI Bill because they wanted them to take up the GI Bill more than black folks who fought in the military. And that's when they invited everybody in to be white, who would be white and who wouldn't be white. And that's so people could take advantage of the GI Bill. That goes back to the military, Brother Lee. So we have to understand the idea of the history of power in this country and understand the GI Bill was also used to buy housing, homes, which we call generational wealth. When we blame our own folks for not having, we didn't know that race played a role in white folks collecting wealth. But we blame each other and say, oh, but there's things that we could have done. See, the problem with us collectively is we don't understand we have the power. All we have to do is just start playing the game.
But when the game is your bread and butter or your voice, like with Whoopi Goldberg, when the game and the venue is the best place for you to push out your change, when they notice you're not there to collect a check, because technically Whoopi don't need no more money. If she don't make another penny, she'll be all right. Or using their position as a subvertive, soapbox. So that they can start planting seeds in the brains. Now, if you are Rupert Murdoch or whoever's in charge of the Associated Press, whoever's in charge of that, not even the show The View, but the network that they put it on, when you start noticing that as a person of power, isn't it your job, though? Not to be funny, just trying to take this at all perspectives. It's your job to get subversive, people who are on your stations off. And if they can't get with the program of the station, then they have to go get off and go find their own. It's not necessarily should Whoopi quit because they don't want to let her send her message. It's should she be fired? Because she's bringing her message to a place where they did not ask for it.
Well, are we saying that her comments was her messaging? Because whoever produced the show and came up with the segment, they're the ones that's responsible for messaging. I think that, most of these television shows, the program, that's why it's called programming for a reason, because it does have an agenda. And I noticed once Trump went away, certain voices who are anti-Trump started disappearing. Once Obama went away, what they call the Negro Obamas, they disappeared off television. MSNBC was snatching all the shows of Obama's favorites once his term was up. So to me, sometimes what I think that we fail to realize is that the programming for a reason, and with podcasting, Whoopi Goldberg can go and create a podcast tomorrow and independently make at least $2 million a year without The View and probably get at least 20 million women followers to listen to her podcast. And she could bring on people by herself and have that conversation. There's no one politically astute really on that show. Even the lawyers that they have on there, Sonny and the rest of them, they're not really saying anything politically astute if you know politics. It's just opinion. But Whoopi has the namesake. Her name is more heavier than everyone else on there. So she has traveling power. She doesn't have to stick with them. And that's the freedom of shows like this today. In podcasting, if you build your brand up and if you build your audience, you don't necessarily have to have mainstream media anymore.
Well, cause, right, because it could just be a group of outcasts. Whoopi, who else have they pushed out? What is that, Tavis? Tavis Smiley was pushed out. Roland. Roland Martin got pushed out.
No, Roland's still on.
Yeah, he's
well,
on Tavis independently.
Still on too. What's still on too?
They're both independent though, because they cannot be picked up by, you know, once the PBS.
Michael Bazin.
Michael
Bazin got pushed
out. Michael Bazin. That's it.
Tom Joyner got pushed out.
What?
Tom Joyner got
pushed out.
No.
Sure he didn't.
But it's the same thing. But not only did he age out, but he got pushed out. Not only did he age out. But going back to Brother Derry's point, you know, he was an Obama fan. And he decided to get off the ride when Obama got out the White House. But I know I don't know because I haven't talked to him yet. Actually, he's on my agenda to reach out to. But I think that he's sitting at home kicking himself in the ass because he wasn't able to go out here and attack Trump. I mean, could you imagine Tom Joyner, J. Anthony Brown skits surrounding Trump? Oh, my goodness, they would have been hilarious. Absolutely freaking hilarious. But
so,
look, I want to piggyback on
when they push you out, there's nowhere to go. I mean, once they
that's not true.
Oprah tried to create that place, but it's not hers anymore. Once you get pushed out, there's very few places to go, Lee.
That's not true, and that's I want to piggyback off of, I was going to say this before you said that. That's not true, and that's the point of what Brother Derry was just saying. Through the internet now, you can create your own lane. Oprah did it with OWN. She created it. It picked up. Somebody wanted to buy it because her name was attached to it. She's a businesswoman. She sold it. There's nothing wrong with OWN. OWN is still afloat. OWN is still relevant. She sold it. She got her money. She dipped out of it. She said, you know what? Y'all kiss my ass. I'm going to take this money. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to chill. You all don't really want me to be here? Okay, that's cool. I'm going to take your money. I'm going to sit back and chill. However, I'm going to write the sale so that I still have the ability to come on and do what I want to do. So,
hey, Lee,
let's
be honest. Yeah. Lee, let's be honest. Right now, the frustration for most black people like Oprah and programmers like them is that are you still dealing with the same type of people you were dealing with in the 90s when we're talking about black folks? Like, you got to really understand that in some regards, a lot of our people want to be mainstream. In the 90s, we never wanted to be mainstream. So it was easier for Bob Johnson to have BET and black folks tune in. It was easier for Jet to sell magazines, and we tune in. Today, we are sounding as if we arrive at power, and we're looking to make sure everybody gets equality, if you get what I'm saying. That's the problem. Mm. And so when you have people who are trying, who coming from a place of saying, no, I'm in these back rooms, I'm fighting up, I'm up against this wall, and then I go out and I fight for who? This is the group that I'm about, man, give me my money, I'm up out of here. Because these folks want to go to hell in a handbasket with gasoline draws on, and if I try to save them, I'm going to drown too. And so people are hitting the eject button because, to be honest, it's like Andre 3000. What did he say? Who am I rapping for? What would he say I appreciate? You think I'm about to drop an album now in the midst of all of this? No, I appreciate my heart. I love myself too much for this. So I just think that a lot of people who are movers and shakers in our community, they're at a point where they're like, are the people really ready for this, or are we happy with this bliss? And I would tell you, if you just watch what's going on with the Kim Ye situation, our people are happy with the bliss. We love the Kardashians. We love the Kardashians.
So what do you think about Byron Allen?
You know?
What do you think about Byron Allen?
I hope Byron really get himself outside of, I hope he does win his lawsuit with McDonald's. I'm always teaming for us. But I know our people supported him with the Comcast situation, and Byron owns a lot of television. But Byron could be putting more people behind the scenes,
no,
as well as putting out more shows. Byron is a wealthy man. He has a lot of television channels. But besides himself, and I want to say maybe two other shows, there's not a lot of black programming there. So I just find it hard for a brother to come get your people when you need a fight. But once the fight is over, you go back into your assimilation process, and just being black is just tokenism for the most part.
Man, let me tell you, because that is the whitest black man I have ever seen in my life. Byron Allen, and yeah. I ain't even trying to be funny. He bred white. He put his bread and butter in, and if he would just stop that tanning bed action, he could be the white man he really wants to be. That is in my Byron Allen has transcended blackness into whiteness, in my opinion. Had he had a football career,
he's non-translucent.
He's damn near win OJ. He is. I'm not black. I'm Byron.
I'm Byron Allen. I don't know what to make of it.
The assimilation. That's what we're fighting for, Brother Barry. We want to be included in the trash all the way up to the top. We are now fighting for people to allow us in still. All the way up to the top, though. We don't want to change it. We don't want to expose anybody. We just want we want power at the top. And so why is it so hard to for us to understand things like Whoopi, things like what y'all about to discuss with Flores, when people tell you, no, you can't get up here with us, you know? I don't know. I don't even know how African Elon Musk did it. Because he's African. Somebody somewhere saw him. Man, don't let Elon in here. Don't let that African up in here. Like, how do you get up
did
in
you say,
up the
court? Hold on. Did you just call white-ass Elon Musk African?
Elon Musk is an African.
Okay.
And Byron Allen is
African.
A white man.
Yeah.
This is how crazy we done got here. Byron Allen is legitimately white, and Elon Musk is the richest African on the planet. So,
And I bet Elon's family was a part of that colonizing group from South Africa.
Absolutely.
And I bet stories are going to come out with the oppression from his family and where they got money and what they did to Mandela.
He's probably part of the Beers people.
Exactly,
and that's the problem with America. Related to the Beers.
Man, now we got to go in on it, right? Now we got to find out about this. Now I got to do that research.
I got to do the research and find out. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sister Rossi.
That's what once you do the research, you become one of the others. This is what I was telling the lady the other day when we were doing that allyship show. When you say, okay, I don't agree. I don't believe this shit no more. Y'all ain't giving me enough evidence. I'm finna go find out for myself. That automatically puts you into this weird others category of people who nobody want to really talk to you because they know you're going to come with that, you know what I'm saying? And they know you just, and did you know? And see, what really happened was, and then they just turn you, your knowledge and your unwillingness to be part of that herd of people who just listen to whatever the programming is, Thomas. If you stop listening to the programming, you become an other. And I don't think most people are ready to deal with the heat that comes with being an other in the population of sheeple, they call them, sheeple.
Yeah. I'm an Aquarius, but I've always been an other. And I don't even mind it.
What the hell
does
that
literally
mean?
Because our role is to be the contrarians regardless of the facts. We're going to always question everything. You know, it's rare that you find Aquarius is going with everything. Like, Aquarius, you can talk to them, they barely like anything. And they'll point it out to you why. And so for me, I'm always careful and overdoing it. But I'm always really questioning where we at as a people right now. So I feel like the struggle for us is really asking ourselves what's really healthy for us. Because I'll say this repeatedly, we have allowed the humpbacks, meaning the people who have been the most hurt amongst us, to talk about us. But what about the people who have succeeded among us being us? How come they don't have a voice anymore? And so when pain is telling the story more so than building and success, I feel like you're going to be in what we are. So for us, you know, even when we talk about reparations, the idea for us to self-repair, to have to rely on ourselves, a lot of us are scared of that because that means that you would have to take responsibility for self and there would be nobody else to blame. So it's just a lot of fear with us as a people right now, man, because we lost our way.
But do you think that folks who have been successful are so quiet because they are nervous about losing what they have? You know, I think that a lot of folks sit on the sidelines, on the fence, whatever, because they are nervous about losing what they have gained. And I blame that on the educational system. I blame that on us buying into this whole, you know, go to college and get a piece of paper thing. And I say that not disrespecting college because, you know, went there, did that whole nine. But something – every now and again, Omar Johnson said some good shit, right? And one of the things he said was that piece of paper means nothing. How can I translate that skill to my people? A welder, you can translate that skill. You can barter that. You know what I'm saying? If I don't have any money, but I have a skill and you have a skill and, you know, your car needs fixing, I can fix your car and you may come through and you may fix my air conditioner. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's something you can barter. But me as an accountant and you as a social worker, how are we bartering there? How does that work?
Right.
What's the exchange within the community? What's the exchange? What does that mean to someone in the community? I'm a social worker. Okay, what does that mean to me?
I think that I'm an
accountant.
That's a great question.
If I'm broke, I don't need a fucking accountant.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't need an accountant. I'm broke.
No. I think those are the great questions that are really, when we talk about accountability amongst ourselves as a people. You know, I always wonder, like, doing community work, do I spend my weekends doing too much of nothing as far as should I be learning another skill, such as carpentry or whatever on the weekends, right? Should I be learning how to, you know, be able, because these are the things that our people need, can't really afford, et cetera, et cetera. So you're right. I feel like a lot of the things that we learned, I think it comes from an educational standpoint, but I also think it comes from, back to Raji's point, when she talked about programming and messaging. I remember in the 90s, it used to be on talk radio, white boys would sit around and ask time and time again, why must Michael Jordan have to give back to his community? Why must these athletes speak out for their community? They really couldn't get it. And I remember black reporters having to explain to them the importance of that. What I don't see today is even when they were talking about, George Floyd and the whole nine, how do we get to this point with the NFL? How do we get to this point with no black ownership, still only one black owner in the NBA? How do we get to this point where we don't have a larger black representation in Major League Baseball? Without us talking directly about it and not just putting it all on the police as if these poor Irish patty rollers are really the reason for systemic racism, right? And so,
yo,
for
why
me,
are they Irish, though? Why is that ism with the cops? Like, they all Irish. What's up with that,
man, that's because of the deal that they made in the 1930s when they invited everybody to the white party. The patty rollers back to the plantations were usually Irish immigrants. And so that was kind of their thing. They practiced being the police on the plantation. So that's why they got the term patty rollers. And usually if you look at New York and other places, even, you know, the Fraternal Order of Policing, most of those members are Irish. So that's where that came from. But I'm just saying in general, the police are not necessarily the judges. They're not the prosecutors and they're not the politicians. And those are usually who the police are working for. Those are the policemen's henchmen, right? I mean, the police are their henchmen, if you will. So for me, when we have these conversations and it comes to messaging, it's almost like, Brother Lee, we walk up to the line, we look over, it's a commercial break, we come back and everything's peaceful until it's a problem again. And then we walk up to the line, because I'll tell you, it's going to be a story that's going to hit around the country. I'm telling you this now. A young brother was just murdered in Minneapolis 2 days ago. Woke up, a no-knock warrant. They got it on video. They killed him. Your boy Benjamin Crump is already here. He's already on his way. You already know.
God.
I might have a meeting with him next week to talk about 12 Watch. But
a no-knock warrant again.
A no-knock warrant. And guess what? It was the wrong guy. And guess what? They broke into two wrong homes and ended up with a murder. And guess what? The search warrant or the warrant was for St. Paul, and St. Paul said that they didn't want a no-knock warrant, and they really didn't need Minneapolis' help for this warrant because they weren't necessarily pursuing this person in that way. So this is something that the city of Minneapolis with their new white female police chief, I want to say that again, new white female police chief is doing, along with the mayor. And so their job now is, even after George Floyd, they're going to get tough on crime. Now, I'm going to tell you the pros and cons of that maybe later on another time, but I just want to just keep in mind, we walk up to the line, we peek over, and then we go right back to it. This 21-year-old black boy is now dead, right? And guess what? He was asleep under the covers. And, of course, if you got a conceal and carry, you got your gun, you're going to have your gun on you. Because who's supposed to be coming in your house without your permission while you sleep? And he didn't point the gun at anybody. He was reaching
Nobody.
For the gun because
he was asleep.
Right. And so these are the things that, you know, we constantly keep dealing with. And people want to walk us up to the line. And part of it is because of the allyship. We don't want to hurt feelings. Like literally, we don't want to hurt feelings. So when we talk about Brian Flores, and we talk about, I just saw with ESPN and his end racism and the whole nine. How could you end racism around the world, players, if you guys don't address the racism inside of your current your league as it stands now?
And then
so
how is that their job? I thought their job was to be professional athletes. Why are we putting the end of global and systemic racism on the back of a person whose job it is to play ball? I feel like we're asking the wrong people, you know. We're asking, and most of them are not and don't have enough power, even if they have the money, they don't have the power to deny anyone anything or to create, you know, an alternate institution to get us out of the one we're in that is already rifled with racism. So, Just play the game, and let like lawyers and judges and the people who deal with justice in a society, they're supposed to, you know, come up with plans and ideas that help alleviate. Because there is no end to it. There is no end to racism. It's in the hearts and minds of the people, but at least kill all the ways in which a racist can enact their power.
Mm-hmm.
So,
here's what I'm saying, Roger. It's not their job. So here's the thing. It's not their job to end global racism. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if everybody swept their own front porch, right?
Mm.
So if we're talking about end racism because of George Floyd, and they make themselves on the global stage, wouldn't the first place to start to look around and say, what's going on with these black coaches? What's going on with these black GMs? With the CTE situation, you guys decided that you were going to pay black victims less, because you're going to say that we already have some type of genetic deformed brain when it came to CTE, costing the former vets millions of dollars in payouts. These are things that are hush, that nobody's talking about on ESPN. Once again, walking up to the line. Because what I've been saying about sports, Brother Lee, for a long time, if it does not become as shocking and as vast as Brian Flores, if the athlete does not have a Kardashian girlfriend or somebody that that's in the mainstream singing or what have you, the average person does not know unless they are a fan of that sport. And so when you watch the ugliness of what's been happening with the NFL for years, you understand that staying in racism does not matter much if you are still discriminating and blackballing players, coaches, et cetera, inside of your own sport. You would start there first before you could say anything on a global scale.
Rashi, you don't believe that a Tom Brady, now I know he just retired and we'll transition to that in a minute, but a Tom Brady who has worked in Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians, and then every assistant head coach, whatever, on that staff is black. Every last one of them black. You don't think Tom Brady could pick up the phone and say, yo, I know y'all looking for a head coach. I know you're looking for a GM, whatever. I just worked with a dude in Tampa, and this dude is amazing. I know you're looking for an offensive coordinator. This dude is amazing. Like, this dude, blah, blah, blah. You don't think those connections exist? They do. They absolutely do. So, no, they can't do it by themselves, but they have more influence that can affect change than I think they are given credit for.
And then they start telling you the parameters of the behavior that you, because just that same guy, Tom Brady, right, he's the one who was vouching for Antonio Brown, right? And do I have it right? The guy whose behavior everybody says is outside of the spectrum of what we expect out of a player, right? If you vouching for me, then you get to tell me, how, like Brother Barry said, how close to the line I get to say we are. I can say we ain't nowhere close to a line. That's my brother Tom. And then I can say, hey, Tom, I don't care who you are. Bill Belichick, I don't care who you are. If you just finna make my body a commodity on this field and I don't get to say when I play, you know, whether I'm hurt or not, then fuck all y'all. I mean, in that order. And let's do it. You know, let's do it publicly. Let's do it on a press conference and let's get the truth out. Again, walking up to the line. But why is he so quiet now? Why have they told him, shut up or we going to sue you? Or is it just nothing to talk about now? This
Are you
is
talking
what I'm
about
saying.
Tom? Are you talking about
just,
Tom? Cause I can tell
no,
you,
I'm talking about Antonio.
I can tell you because I was about to tell you how Tom fits in this Flores story. Oh, I can tell you.
Let's do that. I'd be interested to know.
Because a couple of years ago before Tom got to Tampa Bay, he sent out a text and he said, y'all going to choose me over that fucking guy. Everybody thought he was talking about Jimmy Garoppolo inside of San Francisco. That's not who he was talking about. He was talking about Tua down in Miami. What happened was there was an illegal meeting with Brian Flores, Tom Brady, and the owner of the Dolphins. Flores refused to go into the meeting. Why? Flores was put on by Bill Belichick, the New England Patriots coach, and he also knew that that was what they considered tampering, and the tampering would mess up his name. Flores refused to take the meeting, and because Flores refused to take the meeting, the owner of the Dolphins ended up going with Tua, okay? Now, here's the thing. Tom can't say five words about anything because that puts smut on his name. Why? Because that shows two things. Tom is willing to operate outside of the parameters. Spygate and Inflategate could have been
Everything
right.
Everything else was real.
You know what I'm saying, Lee? Everything else is real because he's real shady. He was looking to shade Belichick in the process. Yeah, and not only that, Tampa Bay wasn't his first choice or his second choice. You get what I'm saying? So Tom is going to be quiet. as a role, as far as Antonio goes, and I'm going to say this to the listeners and to y'all. I think I said this before. Any black man who is non-political is more of a kamikaze than a help. Antonio Brown needs to get mental help. That's not because of his latest output. I heard James Harrison say the exact same thing 2 years ago. James Harrison, black linebacker from Pittsburgh, said mentally wrong with my little. He said something mentally wrong with my little brother, and he needs help. Now, people can take it for whatever they want, but I see folks retweeting and requoting Kanye West. So I know that we don't mind if mentally ill people lead us today. That's part of the problem. I say that Antonio is not going to say anything, Sister Raji, because Antonio has never been about other people. Antonio, that's the problem with him on the teams. He sacrificed the team for not even his greater good. That's why he won't say anything.
But people keep saying whenever you buck up against the NFL, you might as well just cancel any kind of work you're trying to do in the future.
Here's the thing. This goes what I'm saying. He didn't buck up against the NFL. He bucked up the last three teams he's been on. So last four. I'm sorry. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Lee, didn't Brother Mike Tomlin say that they had a non-social media live thing, and that was Antonio who went on Instagram live when Tomlin was talking, and he said that, and that's what got him outside of Pittsburgh. And then he went to the Raiders, and then he fell out with that team. And then he went to New England, and he fell out with that team and even went in on the owner, even though they gave him a chance when nobody else would want to. And then Tom brought him back to Tampa, so that's four in a row. And each time, Sister Raji, it had nothing to do. Even I was there the last time; they were probably wrong. If he's hurt, he should have been playing, in my humble opinion. But I would also say his response. He keeps talking about how he was raised, and I get that. But there are when you're mentally sound, there are certain things you won't do because you're thinking about the long haul. Antonio could have went on the sideline. He could have went out. He could have said, I'm not going to play. They could have said, you go to the locker room. He could have said in a press conference and explained his entire story and said, and now I'm going to sue. And that would have been the end of it, and nobody would have said anything. He'll get another chance in the NFL because his talent outruns his antics. But the issue is he has never really been bucking the system because the system was really messing with him. They torn up contracts to Rashi to pay him more money.
I got a brother for you. I got a question real quick because it was something I read and I didn't fully understand. Now, it's on the subject of there being very few black or any person of color owners of any of the sports, really, but definitely in the NFL. And there's something called a Russ. Am I saying this right? A Russ clause or some kind of rule or clause has been allowed illegal. The Rooney. Thank you. The Rooney rule. What is that? What are they talking about?
Yeah, I'm here, Brother Lee. Lee, you can't hear us? Lee, can you hear me? Lee. Hello? Roger?
Yeah, I'm here. I was asking, what is the Rooney rule?
So the Rooney rule, in regards to Brian Flores, that is a rule where they were supposed to be at least interviewing minority coaches for head coaching positions as well as coordinator positions and GM positions inside of teams. And if you interview, you could even get a third-round compensatory pick, which means that this is extra picks for your franchise. So if you got a team like, let's say, the New York Giants, who – asked Flores to interview even though they knew they were going to hire the other guy. Well, if they interview Flores, that's an extra third-round pick of talent that they get in the draft, which allows their teams to be better. Now, the Rooney Rule is based off of the Pittsburgh Steelers franchise, who has the only long-tenured black coach coaching right now, and that's Mike Tomlin. Now, I want people to understand this. As good as I like Mike Tomlin as a coach, I always root for him more so than his team. I will tell you, Mike Tomlin has not hired any black offensive or defensive coordinators on his staff. So even inside of the people who made the rule, once again, walking up to the line and never really stepping over, yeah, you got a black coach, but what about his tree of coaches behind him, right? And so if Mike's on the staff for 15 years, imagine if Mike had a black defensive coordinator, right, Lee, for 15 years. Or imagine if Mike had a black offensive coordinator for 15 years. Those guys would have got shots, just like Tony Dungy created for Mike. And then before Tony Dungy did it for Mike, Dennis Green did it for Tony. And so, question again, you know, Rooney Rule and all, you know, are these things stuff for us as a people where it suffice, or is it just enough to pacify us to keep us quiet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's skip and get to a deeper part. So Flores gets this text message. He gets his hands on the text message that was sent by Belichick congratulating another guy on getting the job before Flores even interviewed for the job, right? Here's my question. Knowing the Grim Reaper, i.e. Bill Belichick, do you think he sent that mug on purpose? Just to fire fire some people up. Now, I think so. I think Belichick said, you know what? I'm about to go. But before I go, I'm going to kick up some dust in this mofo. Here y'all go.
I do.
Have at it. I'm going to sit back and just chill. You know what I'm saying? And I think he did it because he knew it was wrong. He wanted to fix, and the only way he could fix it is to expose it.
I think that's true. I also think that Bill can always point that he has had three black coaches on his staff, Brian Flores being one of them, and two other brothers who got hired as head coaches from his tree. And so Bill can always say, hey, we've done it here long before it became a Rooney Rule, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I do believe Bill was trying to stick it to the Giants because I believe that Bill honestly thought in his own mind and minds, it's like, think about these people. They hit us with this Spygate. They hit us with Inflategate. I'm getting all this stuff, and I'm seeing like I'm the only conspiring person in the NFL, and this taints my legacy. And just imagine the Dolphins or the Giants or any of these other things, because you got to think about it. I almost believe that all of this, because people said, well, you know, Flores put his relationship with Bill out. I think Flores talked to Bill about this before it came out. And I think Bill is okay with it. And I think Bill's okay with it because what Bill is saying, and just keep in mind what just happened to John Gruden. You got to remember John Gruden got ousted not because they were investigating John Gruden.
Not at all.
That had nothing to do with John Gruden. That had everything to do with the Washington football team or the Commanders or whatever they want to call them, right?
The Commanders.
And so,
the Washington Commander. What the hell is a Commander?
We'll
get into that in a second.
Yay or nay, Lee, yay or nay on the Commander.
We'll get into that in a second. Let him finish his point. We'll get into that in a second.
And so what Flores just did is open up the floodgates where all of these teams have to now open their emails and their text up. And if folks get to destroying phones, right, or computers, a hard drive start getting wiped, right, then we'll know what it is. But who did what? But for Bill, now Bill gets a chance to strike at two or three of the franchises that he's probably had his issues with for a while. Because I don't think Bill has forgiven the Denver Broncos for how they did Josh McDaniels.
Good point. I forgot about that one. And Josh just took the job at Minnesota, right? Didn't he take the Minnesota
Josh
job?
Josh took the job with Oakland.
I'm sorry.
And what you got to think about Oakland is the one of the teams that sued the NFL and actually won. It's only been two teams that fought City Hall and won in NFL history, and that's Oakland and the Dallas Cowboys. And some believe that's why those teams in playoff runs always have controversial calls, is because they sued the league. And that's been their bad fortune with, you know, remember the Tuck rule and the whole nine and how that was seen all kind of crazy. Right.
Bad fortune, okay. So call it fortune.
So you got to think with the Flores situation, Sister Rashi, this is going to open up. Everybody has to open up their emails and their correspondence. And when I'm almost
Got nothing to do. This is real. This ain't no slow show.
Oh yeah.
This is a person who got privy to some really, and didn't, instead of going in with it and going under with it, they have given access to it. And what we about to see is high level ducking and dodging. All the way up to the fantasy damn football realm. All right.
And you gotta think about it. Even with Hugh Jackson making his comments about the Browns, and the Browns coming out and making their statement, the first thing I thought about was, man, you know what y'all should have did was cut those guys a check, apologize, and left it there, kept it internal. Hugh Jackson said something that was even more damning, Brother Lee. I think Hugh's comments where he said, I took this information to Roger Goodell already. They know. Brian Flores.
So now he's walking away.
Walking
away. So,
you see what I'm saying?
So the NFL is massive. Let's be clear about that, okay? They have wiped off the face of the earth any record of black people playing football before the NFL. If you Google it, you don't find it. It happened, though. There were black teams that played during the NFL and before the NFL became the NFL. There were black players. Where did these black players come from? They didn't just all one day walk up and be like, oh, I can throw, I can catch, I can run. There was an organization before then. But if you try to Google it, there's no mention whatsoever of a black football league. None. The NFL has wiped that away. NFL is a freaking ginormous entity, and it will try its best to crush anything and anyone that comes in its way. Hence the CTE situation, the reason they denied it for so many damn years. They understood how much money it was going to cost them. Hence what they did to certain players, cut them out of their rightful payouts. And others, they did not. But here you go. Hugh says, and he clearly said, I was incentivized to lose. The team was incentivized to lose. Now he's saying, nah, never happened. Why? Because one day he wants to get back to the NFL. And somebody called him and is like, yo, look, you were close, dog. You real close. You can come back. But if you keep this up, you ain't coming back.
So you said Hugh walked back in statements?
I'm reading the stories now. He's walking them back, saying that he was not incentivized. He's starting to walk them back.
Well, no. So I saw an interview with him, a podcast. I'm gonna send you the link, right? And so what he said was it was in the contract, but he turned down the money and told them to put the money into getting better players. That he didn't want the bonuses. And so I think that's different. And I also heard him say that he doesn't plan to come back. That he feels like the coaches need to
resurface this week in NFL circles.
I'm listening. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so he was saying that he believed that these coaches should start looking at HBCUs and other things to coach instead of sitting there waiting. And I think that's just the Rashi's point. We got needs ourselves elsewhere. This goes back to cleaning up, you know, our own steps, sweeping our own steps. We got schools that are deteriorating, and football has kept, predominant white PWIs, what they call them, right? They've kept those institutions afloat. I'm sitting here watching Indiana versus Illinois as we speak, and I see 80% of the players on the floor are African American.
Black.
And I asked, you know, so I asked that question. If we can take these institutions and turn them into powerhouses with black coaches being at the forefront of a lot of these programs, why can't we do that for HBCUs? Because here's the thing, it's about dollars in entertainment. If Grambling has a Fab Five, guess who ESPN is going to have on television every Saturday?
Grambling.
I'm
looking at Pro Football Talk right now. So this story came out at 8:12 a.m. this morning. Jackson initially started his backtrack early in the week, but on Friday night he stated clearly that Haslam never offered to pay him to lose games. He said, I'm telling you, somebody get it. No, I was never offered money like Brian had mentioned, Jackson told CNN. I think this is a totally different situation, but has some similarities. Still, Jackson
said
that Haslam wanted to lose and that Jackson himself complained about Haslam's plan at the time. Haslam also said black coaches like himself and Flores have been thrown into situations, and that's wrong, it shouldn't be Haslam, it should have been Jackson, thrown into situations where owners weren't trying to win. You know what I'm
saying? I wouldn't take that as a backtrack, because what I got what he was saying the whole time was it was incentive laced in his contract. It wasn't worded to throw games, but it's things that you know is code. The code is, Lee, if our team is the youngest,
right?
Youngest in football means you're not about to win, right?
Win, correct.
It's an incentive
that
bet,
means you're
right?
Drafting. Right, and high draft.
Right, and there was 1 year, his first year in Cleveland, where he talked about they got rid of all of the better veteran players that could have helped them win. Why? Because they were trying to get this young team. So they were incentivizing him to play loser football, but it was never stated that he wanted him to lose. That's the difference.
I have a question while we have you, because, you know, we're going to eat up all your time. You think it would be better for Lamar Jackson to finish as a Raven or get traded?
I honestly think that it would be great for him to stay. Here's the thing. That franchise has been known for defense. They had some bad luck this season. And I honestly believe if the Ravens would have stayed healthy, we'd be talking about the Ravens in the Super Bowl. Because they could play defense, they could run the ball, and Lamar is a weapon all into himself. For me, I think that, you know, John Harbaugh. I think he does a great job with Lamar. I think that they believe in Lamar where these other teams would have wanted him to play wide receiver. And I think that you always reward people. You're loyal to people that's loyal to you. That's what I always say. You know, it's like a thing that people who believe in you, you believe in them in return. And let's be real, Baltimore is a black city, and they need a black quarterback. And that's the right guy for it. And so for me, I just think when I think Baltimore, I just think Lamar Jackson, and, you know, and part of it is just that grit. Now, if he decided to go somewhere else, I could see him being successful wherever, but I think that the brother should stay. I would also say humbly, though, you know, with football, what I hope that some of these younger brothers understand is that get in, get your money, and leave.
And get out.
If the game is rigged, get out, invest this money, flip these 20s to 30s to $40 million contracts that you're getting after the smoke settles, taxes are paid, divest that into something that's going to flip it to $80 to $100 million, chuck the deuce signs, and go. You don't have to play for 12 years, 14 years to be a Hall of Famer. You get your two contracts, you get your rookie contract, and you get your big contract, and then look for the door. And the reason why I say that, Brother Lee, is because I feel like, A, that helps combat CTE more, and B, I also think that that pushes these owners to respect the players a lot more. When they see that these guys squander their money away and they are depending on them for – you know, employment and other things on the back end, they can continue to mistreat you the way that they do. To Sister Rashi's point earlier, it's almost as if we are still dependent on them no matter what. And I'm sorry, they don't need to keep paying for more facelifts, butt jobs, breast jobs for these biracial Instagram chicks. Brothers can save that money and put that money to investment and get you a wife, get you an accountant, get you a private lawyer, and just make your money and go about your business and just keep your health, retire. Pull a Patrick Peterson. Remember Patrick? Patrick Willis. Remember Patrick Willis for the San Francisco 49ers?
Mm-mm.
You remember that linebacker, young linebacker from Ole Miss? He was one of the best top three linebackers in the game. And after the 49ers lost that Super Bowl to the Baltimore Ravens, he retired.
Mm-hmm.
Six seasons into his career. And he said, "I'm going to walk away with sound mind and body." There's nothing wrong with
that. I remember
that. I played this game enough.
I remember that.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Be that guy. Be that guy. We need to salute that guy more, because at the end of the day, what we're seeing with these franchises is, because Sister Raji asked about the Rooney Rule. The Rooney Rule is only about coaches. But we have to ask, you know, there's a brother out there. His
Hold
last
on.
Name is Smith. I forgot his first name.
I disagree with
Why
that.
Why he can't buy
it. The Rooney Rule was actually about management. It was not about coaches. It morphed into coaches, but it was actually about management. It was supposed to bring more blacks into the – huh?
Certainly. The fact of the matter is, one name that always get left out of these conversations since you brought up Baltimore is Ozzie Newsome. And what was Ozzie able to do with Baltimore? And what was Ozzie able to do with the Cleveland Browns before that? And so the thing is that we've had black success before. And Ozzie's still inside of – I think he's in a consultant role, even though he's retired as a general manager.
Oh, he's still a Raven. He's still on the payroll, right? He's still on the payroll, dog.
Yeah, because, you know, from what I've heard, Ozzie has even contacted other teams about coaches and players and said, "Hey, this kid won't fit here, but he'll be great for you. Hey, this coach, we already got a coach here, but this coach is good for you," right?
Mm-hmm.
So Ozzie has been playing the role of he wants to direct the flow of where black talent is going, right? But I only believe that that only works, brother, if they do get black ownership. And I will tell you, the reason why they don't want to get black ownership, the reason why they don't want another Dennis Green situation with black coaches, with black coordinators, et cetera, is because what they know, what everybody else knows, is that when we have our own running it and we're not doing wrong by our people, the owners, they're scared that those free agents, those top-tier black free agents wouldn't want to play on that team. Those top-tier black coaches wouldn't want to coach on that team. That black tier GM, the next Ozzie, wants to be on that staff, and that's what they're worried about.
So you know, I'm sitting on pins and needles, because today Duke University plays the University of North Carolina, and this is the last time that Coach K visits Chapel Hill. I'm thinking about that team and the composition of that team. Once again, as you said, the vast majority of the players, 100% of the starting five, is black. They're all African-American. Some of the bench players are Caucasian, but the vast majority of the players are African-American. They're black. I'm thinking about football. Again, majority of the players, African-American. Baseball, we've lost our grip. It's definitely gone back to a white boy game. It used to be the brothers and then the Latinos, but the dark-skinned Latinos more so than anybody. So now it's morphed into the Asians and the white boys. And, you know, it's baseball. It is what it is. Hockey, ain't a lot of bros in hockey. It is what it is. It's some bros in hockey, but ain't a lot of bros in hockey. Tennis is still getting blacker and blacker. Coco Gauff and others. Gymnastics is getting browner. Definitely getting browner. They nervous about that too. Because Simone Biles is going to be around for a while. And there's some folks coming up right behind her. I saw this young girl the other day from the University of Michigan. Man, I thought it was Gabby Douglas. That little girl looked just like Gabby. I was like, good Lord. Did Gabby go to the University of Michigan? I thought it was a damn repeat. It wasn't. This young girl, boom. Then you see the sister, that UCLA and others. They coming. Will we ever be in a position of leadership in these organizations that we really can affect change for the long term? As you said, create a coaching tree. I agree with you. I never even thought about Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin has absolutely sucked. You're absolutely right. In his tenure, he has sucked. It's a damn shame that Bruce Arians has more black folks on his coaching staff than Mike Tomlin. And you cannot tell me that there are not black folks out there that are not qualified. You cannot tell me that. You can't tell me that. You cannot tell me that.
You know what has disappointed me? It's how quiet Tony Dungy has been about the whole thing. It's something
Tony talks.
I'm not seeing any articles where they are quoting Tony. Where do I go to find where Tony feels about this? When he retired, he took, you know, he took most of that stat with him, you know.
Well, no, because Tony didn't take his staff. You got to remember, it's a big story about Jim Caldwell with the Detroit Lions. He was on Tony's staff. He also actually replaced Tony.
He took his, you know, that there hasn't been, there's no other black quarterback, black coach that has had a Super Bowl winning team. So when he decided
sister, you got to remember that Jim Caldwell followed Tony that was on his staff with Indianapolis, and then he took them to the Super Bowl where they lost to the Saints, right? Jim Caldwell got fired from the Saints. Now, this goes back to what we're talking about, how these white folks play black coaches. Jim took them to the Super Bowl. Then Peyton Manning got hurt. They started this campaign that was widely known throughout sports. It was called the Suck for Luck campaign. You know what that means, Suck for Luck?
No, they were
going to tank. They wanted to tank games in Indianapolis as Jim Caldwell as coach, and they wanted to get Andrew Luck as quarterback to replace replace Peyton Manning. It worked, and soon as they got Buddy, they fired Jim Caldwell. They fired Jim and they hired a white coach, Chuck Pagano. So a lot of people forget it because Bruce Arians was on that staff. Remember that? Chuck Pagano got cancer. He couldn't coach, and then Bruce took over afterwards. Yep, and then Bruce got the job inside of Arizona, right? And Bruce has always carried on his staff, whether Arizona or whatever, Buzzin' Brothers. But I would say that not only Caldwell, but Lovie Smith, that's also off Tony Tree, took Chicago to the Super Bowl, right? They fired Lovie after a winning season. Brother Caldwell goes to Detroit, has three winning seasons, got fired after a 10-6 or 9-7 record. Detroit went to the Super Bowl. They hired a GM from the Patriots who said 9-6 ain't good enough. Detroit ain't been back, ain't won more than 7 games since they fired their brother 6 years ago. And Caldwell has not gotten another interview as a Super Bowl runner-up coach. Who really, they did well in the Super Bowl, right? They just played against a more aggressive team. But he did a great job coaching that squad. Still hasn't gotten another look.
So what we're saying is it's not your skill. And when you talk about owning a team, it's not how much money. Because we could have a Magic Johnson, a Jay-Z conglomeration, and have the ownership of an NFL team if it was about money.
Billionaire Robert Smith has been trying to buy a franchise since the Minnesota
Vikings were on the block, I want to say over a decade ago. And Robert Smith has been trying to buy every franchise that has come open inside of the NFL. Keep this
but
in mind.
No.
Those the
who
31
those,
owners
who are
have to vote you in.
Who are
they have to, yep.
The 31 owners
he just
have
said
to
it,
vote
the 31
you
owners.
In.
Right.
So think about it. The guys who won't hire a black coach also won't vote for a black person to own the team. So how do you get in this exclusive boy club, right? How do you break that down? What are those barriers? And so that's why I say people behind those wealthy people behind the scenes who fight for our people, I think the exhaustion comes for sometimes who am I really fighting for? Because am I fighting for people that's going to appreciate it? Or when things get tough, they're going to throw me up under the bus and roll with white folks. Because to fight white people, they got to dirty your name. Brian Flores, if he's ever cheated on his wife, ever beat his wife, have any kids out of wedlock, we about to find it out now. If that brother got herpes, it's going to be on the, it's going to be coming. Okay? And that's going to show how we stand with Brian Flores.
Oh, he been vetted. Whoever took on it, whoever, whatever lawyer woke up with the balls to say, yes, I will represent you, Brian Flores, in the case.
But hold on. But the question is, will it even go to trial? Because arbitration is normally written into those contracts. So is this something that's going to go to arbitration, or is this something that's going to skirt through and go to trial?
Oh, man, that's going to trial.
I'm thinking it's going to hit arbitration. I really am.
I think it's,
unless the lawyer found the way to get around the contract, I think it's going to arbitration. As most contracts in the NFL are written.
I think there's one body of people that hasn't spoke on it yet, and I'm shocked y'all ain't brought it up yet, because they love and they have been trying to go at the NFL for a while, and that's Congress. Congress, when Congress steps in, now you got to open all the books up, right? So it's one thing that all this is happening on SportsCenter and the whole nine now. But when you start talking racial discrimination and you start talking about it, Black History Month and all this stuff is going on, hey, man, the Democrats, they're going to need some votes, because they've been screwed up. They going to, listen, man, like I said, you got to scapegoat somebody, whether it's the police or the NFL. Somebody else has to be. It can't be the politicians, brother. So
right.
I think if Congress get a session with their subpoena power, because they can say this is more of a civil rights issue as well.
Yeah, and it's a congressional Senate hearing or something like that, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. A congressional Senate. And then also, Lee, you got to think about the gambling that's impacted by this if you are tanking games on purpose. And once again, the Suck for Luck campaign, I don't understand how nobody brought that up yet. Literally, we had the Philadelphia 76ers for over 5 years losing, and they called it the process. Everybody knew the 76ers was not trying to win games, and they ran through a myriad of coaches not trying to win games. Oh, we forgot so fast. This is sports. This is professional sports where they do tank. Oh, we forgot that the NBA had a whole scandal where the main thing was the refs said, hey, I didn't bet on the players. I bet on who was reffing the games and the relationship that those refs had with the players, because I knew these referees were going to call the game a certain way based off of their relationship with a LeBron, based off of their relationship with Allen Iverson. So if they don't like Allen Iverson, hey, man, he can get beat up all night long. They're not calling fouls. And they said the FBI fact-checked his strategy, and Rashi, he was 80% right on his bets. 80% right on bets. You know what that does? And all he doing is
a whole lot of change.
Referee in the game.
That's a whole lot of change.
And so this happens. there hasn't been any major change to the referees and what they can and won't do in the NBA. There ain't even been no scrutiny, man. I sat in an Uber. I drove an Uber with one of the refs that's still reffing today. We had a conversation on two players, LeBron James and James Harden. Told me he based LeBron, how they're going to ref LeBron based off of his warm-ups. He said LeBron is taking it serious in warm-ups. Then we know he came to play and will be a little bit more attentive. But, you know, if he comes in and he's doing those dunks and putting on a show, we know, man, you know, at the end of the day, man, you know, he's going to do all the flopping stuff, you know what I'm saying? I said, well, don't James do a lot of flopping? Yeah. But you know, man, I mean, people like James, man. It's kind of hard. Now, this brother, I don't want to call him out, but he's a bald-head, light-skinned ref.
Oh,
and
Lord.
I guarantee
you don't want to call him out, though.
You know what?
I'm going to say this. If you watch LeBron James play and you see this brother wrestling, I guarantee you the Lakers are going to lose the game. I watched 10 games with LeBron at L.A. since that man said it. And every time he's on, they won't call fouls. It doesn't matter if he gets slapped across the face, blood bleeding off his head, his teammates or nothing. That man stands under the basket and will not blow the whistle. So you can't tell me that these games are not rigged, A. And B, that also means that they are scamming the American public. That's why Congress got to get involved.
Let's go from one goat to another. Let's transition back to football so we can get off of this and go to that North Carolina decision. Brady finally decided to officially call it quits. Now, I thought he was going to be money hungry and wait till today to call it quits because yesterday he was due a signing bonus. A pretty sizable signing bonus, mind you. But he went ahead early in the week, and he decided to formally announce his plan to retire. The question that – well, two things that come to mind. First, is he going to retire as a Patriot, or is he going to retire as a Buck? Second, he says that Lamar Jackson is next. Do you believe he's going to retire as a Patriot or a Buck?
You know what, brother? There's some controversy there on that.
Right.
From what I saw is that he, when he gave all his thanks, he didn't thank the Patriots.
Exactly.
And that there's some feelings about that. There's some feelings about that, and the Patriots are not too happy about that, brother. That's what I heard. So I don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a great question. You know, I would hope that he retire as a Patriot, but with this Flores situation and Tom being attached to it, also, I don't know. What does Bill Belichick have to do with all this? But I would say he should retire a Patriot, though, because they gave him a chance. Six-round quarterback, he would have sat on the bench or somebody
last man.
And never would have got a shot. They gave him a
last
chance.
Last man. Mr. Irrelevant.
You know, and so people have to always remember, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, sports or just racism in general, man, it's about lack of opportunity. Someone gives you an opportunity, no matter what transpires, you have to remember that opportunity matters. Nobody else would like you. Nobody else would know who Tom was if Bill Belichick didn't give him a shot.
Right. Okay, so then the second question, him passing the torch to Lamar Jackson, you think that's going to come to pass? You think Lamar Jackson will win a Super Bowl?
I think Lamar Jackson can win the Super Bowl. I think the issue with the Ravens is they have to get them a number one. And if the guy Adams
they got a, we got
from,
a number one. Rashad
no,
Bateman
no,
is a number
no,
one.
No. That's number
okay.
two. I think
okay.
if you guys can get Adams from Green Bay, I think and everybody else comes back healthy because those guys dropped too many passes in the end zone from Lamar, and that cost them a lot of games was the drop passes from the wide receivers. If you can get someone like Adams or a top-tier number one, Bateman is nice. He'll be a nice number two, and Brown could still stretch as a three. I think if you get you a number one, I don't think nobody can stop this team. You can't stop the run, then you won't be able to stop the pass. What else can you do?
Here's my issue. I think Bateman can be a number one, and I'll tell you why. Remember, he was injured 5-6 games. he didn't have the opportunity to really develop the chemistry. By the time he came out, Lamar went out. So, you know, you got that.
My nephew played with Bateman. My nephew played with Bateman at the University of Minnesota.
Okay.
And so I wouldn't necessarily say – here's the thing with the NFL. I would say that Bateman, because he's been injured so much, he still has to – unless he comes in like the Jefferson kid here in Minnesota, or he comes in like the kid from Cincinnati and he just tears it up, Chase, you know, for Lamar being a left-hand quarterback, that's the only thing that I worry about, because the spin on the ball is a lot different. And so you have to get used to a left-hand quarterback.
Gotcha. Okay. I think Lamar should request a trade. And I say that because of Greg Roman. I don't think that marriage is going to work. And you've had enough years to really put it in perspective and put it in play. Now, either you allow him more freedom or you really give him a scheme that works. And we can't keep doing the same shit over and over again. Like, come on, dog. We got to do something different. So, yes, we need an offensive line, without a doubt, to give him a little more time for protection. Yes. But in addition to that, I think it would be refreshing for him to go somewhere else. I know people are going to hate me for that. I'm a Ravens fan. Don't want that to happen. I don't think it's the best thing for the Ravens. I think it's the best thing for him. You know what I'm saying? I'm more concerned with him winning a Super Bowl than I would put that over the Ravens winning the Super Bowl, to be honest with you. Why? Because the Ravens already had two Super Bowls. You know what I'm saying? This cat has the potential and the ability to do it. I think he's just in the wrong situation. Now, you ask him to go out there again this year to put it up. Now, the difference is you have a true number two in our backup quarterback now. So he's been under the fire.
Right.
He's been under the gun. I think you really have a super 1-2 punch. You know what I'm saying? This is not just a cleanup guy coming off the bench anymore. This is now a dude that can be a starter in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? And it would behoove the Ravens to either draft or sign an undrafted quarterback that I will not name as of yet because I want this motherfucker on the team. And if they get him, then I would say trade our backup quarterback away and get some additional picks to help either on the defensive side or the offensive side next year during the draft to boost the team even more, because the Ravens were one of the oldest teams in the NFL. And
Well, I think the first thing that you guys need to figure out is who is your team trainer with all those injuries.
Ain't that damn.
Because the medical staff was crazy. The other thing that I would say is, you know, if it works, it works. You know, the one thing that I've noticed is that, you know, teams have done things that I've questioned in the past, but it worked for them. And so I think that if you got a strategy and you got it sound, you know, you want to stick with it. But if I'm Lamar, and I say this all the time, you know, sometimes it looks like the grass is greener on the other side.
On the
and
side,
we were talking about the organizations and how they ran. And it's just that the Ravens have a top-notch organization.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I feel like for black quarterbacks, black coaches, those are the organizations that work. You know, Marvin Lewis came through the Ravens, right? Hugh Jackson also came through the Ravens, right? The thing is that for us, we hardly get around people that treat us just. And that's the toughest thing with all 32 franchises is, do you put the kid on a team and the kid goes to a team and that team doesn't treat him like quarterback that he should be treated like, you know, then what? Then we have a lost talent. So if you can find a team, if you can find a team that's going to treat him like, you know, what Tom Brady said, he's the next coming, then certainly. But if he can't, I mean, you know, I hope he stays where he's at, because I don't want to see that talent lost, man. I don't want the Quincy Carter situation where Lamar gets caught smoking weed, and it goes from weed to everybody calling him a crackhead because the coach or the GM kept saying it was dope and not saying it was weed. And so people, when they said dope at the time, people just assumed that the brother was smoking crack.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. So, again, I wanted to transition from that into the redistricting in Carolina. You know what? Let's stick sort of the same vein. Let's go to the HBCU situation. So all week long, a number of historically black colleges and universities have been getting bomb threats. And it comes to a head, the FBI has six juveniles identified as persons of interest in these bomb threats. The internet is a curious thing. This is the the six persons of interest were using some sophisticated means to hide, to disguise the source of the threats, but they seem racially motivated. I wonder what tipped them off to the racial part of it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. From NBC News, six tech-savvy juveniles have been identified as persons of interest by the FBI and threats to historically black colleges and universities that appear to be racially motivated. More than a dozen historically black colleges and universities received bomb threats on Tuesday, the first day of Black History Month. A law enforcement official says the FBI has identified six persons of interest around the country, all juveniles, who are suspected of making the threats. The official says they appear to be tech-savvy, using sophisticated methods to try to disguise the source of the threats, which appear to have a racial motivation. Howard University was among the first to issue a shelter-in-place order early Tuesday, just a day after the school and several other historically black colleges and universities received similar threats. A bomb threat against the university is being investigated, an alert from Howard University said, according to NBC Washington. All persons on campus are advised to shelter in place until more information is available. The emergency alert was timestamped at 3:29 a.m. Tuesday, the first day of Black History Month. An all-clear was later issued for Howard University following a probe. In addition to Howard, the University of the District of Columbia, also in Washington, D.C., Morgan State University, Coppin State University in Baltimore, Fort Valley State University in Fort Valley, Georgia, Kentucky State University in Frankfort, Kentucky, Xavier University of Louisiana in New Orleans, Edward Waters University in Jacksonville, Florida, Alcorn State University in Lorman, Mississippi, Mississippi Valley State University in Atadena, Mississippi, Rust College in Holly Springs, Mississippi, Spelman College in Atlanta, Jackson State University in Jackson, Mississippi, Tougaloo College in Tougaloo, Mississippi, all reported bomb threats, according to school officials and social media posts. Like Howard, Kentucky State, Jackson State, the University of District of Columbia, Tougaloo College, and Coppin State issued all clear alerts after finding the threats to be unsubstantiated soon after reporting the threats. Additional threats were reported at a number of other colleges and universities. Morgan State University President David K. Wilson said in a statement to community members that he was saddened to confirm that the school had received a bomb threat after being asked by several people whether this is real. Unfortunately, and sadly, it is, he said. The campus is being searched building by building this morning with our residential halls being searched first. Wilson said nothing had been discovered within any of the school's residential facilities. Morgan is one of the most historical and consequential universities in the nation. Our history has been one where we have endured all kinds of challenges and disruptions, but we have always emerged stronger, he said. My message to you this morning is to stay strong, remain resilient, and continue to prepare yourselves to grow the future and lead the world, because our nation and world desperately need more leaders steeped in the values we teach here at Morgan, he said. Those values are leadership, integrity, innovation, diversity, excellence, and respect. Hate is not one of them. Wilson also said that he hoped the bomb threats to our national treasure and to many of our other sister HBCU institutions will be aggressively investigated by the FBI. In the wake of earlier bomb threats this month, the FBI said it would investigate the matter. In statements released on Monday and Tuesday, it said it was taking action after the latest string of threats. The FBI is aware of the series of bomb threats around the country, and we're working with our law enforcement partners to address any potential threats, the FBI said. Yada, 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 yada. This is ridiculous. Like, yeah. So you have nothing else better to do than to try to disrupt
right. Institutions
of higher learning.
If we can't have it, no one will. If
no
we
more.
Can't have it, no one will.
No
and it's not just that. It's the school shootings that they don't want to report no more. It's the churches getting shot up and blown up. It's old ladies getting stabbed in the mouth. You know, it's all kind of craziness. You know, walking up to Chinese people or Oriental people, or Asiatic people, and beating them up, to my blaming them for corona. It is a craziness. It is an insanity that is, some of it is Republican-esque, in my opinion, but it's definitely I can't have it. All right, well, I'm going to break it then.
Is it that, or is it more of, because it's not us, it can't be you. You know what I'm saying? Meaning it's a other situation. I don't care if you have it or not. Just the simple fact that you're other, I don't like that fact. Is it more of that, you think?
No, I think what it is, brother, to be honest with you, because they're saying there were some juveniles who are supposed, six juveniles are the ones that they're questioning about it. Mm-hmm. I think at the end of the day, when it comes to a lot of this, it's called, you know, what are we tolerating as far as discourse amongst even young people? And I think that, you know, you start doing, because, you know, everything starts with a thought, thoughts turn into words, and words turns into actions, right? And I think that really when we look at HBCUs, and you think how vast those bomb threats were and how disruptive it was to our people, I honestly believe that because race has almost become a game, if you will, the way that it's talked about, the race card and things of that nature, it's almost as if we've taken race and made it into this mirage, if you will, or racism into this mirage. So people are still out operating with the scope of racism and doing racist things, but we're not talking about it. Sister said it was shootings. Shootings have happened. It was a shooting inside of a school or outside of a school here inside of Minnesota, down the street from my house, this week as well. Yeah. A black boy was murdered by some Mexican kids, right? Shot outside the school. And you start asking, like, the value of black institutions or black people, right? Like, why would you feel like it's okay to make these threats? And let's say if they were real, like, what would make you feel like you're going to get away with it? And why would you risk it? Like, why would you take that risk, right? You know, and so for me, I think a lot of it, brother, is the discourse. It's the conversation. It's the extremism. It's like things are so extreme these days. Things very rarely have context. Rarely is looked at in discernment to say, hey, you know, I think it means this, but it could mean this. You know, and I'm not, you know, it's not mine, so I don't need to destroy it, right? Or I'm not going to attend. I'm going to let that be. It's everybody's overlapping into everybody's thing. And I think Sister Rashi is right in the aspect that if we can't control it or we can't have it, you shouldn't have it either, part of the extreme measure that we have in this country. You know, white folks constantly saying that their liberties are being infringed on, and what they do, they go and infringe on everyone else's.
Right. Mm-hmm. What it is, the liberty to be able to infringe on others is the stopping them from doing that is impeding their rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I had to understand. They want the right to choose how to treat you. And so when you tell them and narrow the spectrum and parameters on how people get to treat you, then there's a problem. And so that's what this whole show's been about for real. Whether it be football, whether it be, you know, the power of fear over, you know, being able to run your institution or your business the way you want to, the power of, you know, that's what we've been dealing with, being able to tell people on television, hey, this is the truth of the matter as I understand it, and this is what the behavior we need to look out for when you get in trouble for saying stuff like that. Power. When someone has it, they don't want to give it up. We have found ways. We're finding ways of picking away at it. But as Brother Barry say, we look at the edge. We understand that to dismantle it means to unravel society as we know it. And no one is ready to just stop, you know, really analyze everything we do to see which part of it exploits who, and then find a way to stop that. We won't do it. And so picking at it by exposing emails won't do it, and telling people about the nature of the Holocaust that most people don't even agree actually happened won't do it. What we need to decide is, do we separate or do you keep trying to dismantle power that has a rickety, you know, tower of influence? What do you do? Do you dissociate? Or do you try to clean out the rot from within the institution? And I personally think that cleaning out the rot is a suicide mission, because the work of the rot eats away at your overall purpose. You don't get your life. You get whatever it takes to fix the mess for people who live after you. Do you want your life? Or do you want the life of people after you to be right? Because if you want your life, you just have to tell people, hey, man, yeah, that's fucked up. But if you care about how your children is going, it's like, no, this needs to change. This right here fucked up. We got to fix this right now. So it's a different mindset. And I do believe I switched in my 30s, brothers. I switched from, oh, man, that's fucked up, to now we're getting this cleaned up right now. Right the fuck now. And so,
speaking of cleaning up, speaking of cleaning up, I want to get this in before we go off. Again, North Carolina State Supreme Court struck down the GOP-drawn congressional map that would have given Republicans control of the 11 of the state's 14 districts. In a ruling Friday, much of our split down party lines. The decision is a resounding win for Democrats and the latest sign yet that their legal strategy is equalizing the House battlefield and giving them a check over Republicans in several key states. The North Carolina Supreme Court, which is composed of 4 Democrats and 3 Republicans, made a speedy decision just 2 days after opening arguments Wednesday. The ruling reverses a January 11th decision by a lower court that let the Republicans draw on congressional map stand.
You know, the extremisms. Extremisms. You know, where you got the Republican Party
2 minutes left,
or any party trying to manipulate. I think that's where we're at. That's what drives everything on the bottom. You see it from the politics, and it just trickles down into the citizens.
Well, I think next week we should discuss this black woman in the Supreme Court push that's going through Biden. It's getting traction. It's got people's feathers ruffled on both sides. And I'd like us to pick that apart a little bit about there has never been a black woman Supreme Court member, and he's ready. Our president said he's ready.
They're going to be black, or Kamala black? Are we going to ask that question?
Brother. You know what? And good night to you too, Brother Barry.
Look, you all be good. You all be safe. Thanks for listening live or later. As we say about this time every week, we love you, and the damn thing you can do about it. Peace.